Chodesh of Vavos Women, Shir Shar HaBachina, Sunday night, or with Tezvov Iyar, which you see when you go outside and you look at the moon. Okay, we'll start. We're in Perek Hei of Shar HaBachina, and I'd like to start with the words B'chivan Shehu Kain. With the English translation, it's the bottom of 186, the last four lines. Maxwell House, you have there? B'chivan Shehu Kain. Here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines from the bottom of the first paragraph. Nine lines from the bottom. V'chivan Shehu Kain, and since this is the case that he's chosen to focus on a person, on a human being, Fishar HaBechina, even though he said the seven disciplines, but he's going to focus on a person. Roy Lonu Lahaskir, so now we are going to mention Mikoma Shazacharnu, all the things we talked about how amazing it is, how a person is put together biologically, emotionally, intellectually, the kesher of the guf with the neshama, the fact that a person is creative. Where are those thoughts coming from when he's creative? Like, where are they springing from? Et cetera, and so on and so forth. Memory, forgetfulness, everything about a person, his ability to tame nature. So we're going to talk about a ma'at mezer mikol inyan. He says, you know, I'm not writing a science textbook here. He says, I'm writing ma'at mezer, means a drop in the bucket. Now, you have to remember, if the Chavis Halvavis describes what he's writing as a drop in the bucket, and you remember that he wrote it 1,000 years ago, so that drop in the bucket, compared to what we now know, the science has advanced, the knowledge that we have at our fingertips with a click of a mouse, even if we didn't go to school, but if the click of a mouse we have available to us, that drop in the bucket has become itself a drop. Like, if you look at the drop as the bucket, it's a double drop. Let's say the Chavis Halevis writes 1/100th of what he could. He wrote ma'at mezer, a little. Let's say he wrote 1/10th of what he knew. But that 1/10th is 1/100th, 1/1000th of what we know now. Our amount of knowledge we know now is so much more. So remember that. And he calls what he's writing ma'at mezer. So we'll touch upon it a little. Today I started going to elaborating on the Shar HaBechina the way we could see it nowadays, as we'll see. So now I'm going to mention just a few things about a person, and my purpose is lahoir hamis alim al mashu chayav lozochro tomid. Remember, this is Chodesh Halvavos 101, Shar HaBechina 101. This is something we always have to keep in mind. You always have to feel gratitude to Hashem. There's three, really, maybe I never spoke it out so clearly, there's three fundamental things that he wants us to get out of Shar HaBechina. To realize Hashem's power, Hashem's chesed, and Hashem's wisdom. And I guess I had a fourth, Hashem's the reality. I mean, that he brought down the pasuk in the few words before the paragraph that we started today, Umibisori Echza Eloka, I will see Hashem in me. When I learn about the human body and the human being, I will see that Hashem is there. I won't have any sfeikos in Emunah. When you see the chokhma and the complexity and the plan and the design of the human body, and again, this is the Chavis Halevis talking, we now know a million times more than what he knew. I think we should learn this pasuk by heart, those three words, Umibisori Echse Eloka, I see Hashem in my body, in my flesh, I see Hashem, I feel Hashem. But here he's saying, I have to wake people up and tell them, Al Mashehu Chayav Lozochro Tomid. This is a very strong sentence. It's an obligation to always remember these things, to be aware of them, because that will create a tremendous feeling of gratitude, and that is in turn the basis of our obligation to serve Hashem. And then we're in a good mood, and we're optimistic, and we're thankful, and we're grateful, and it's life transforming. But he says it's Chayav Lozochro Tomid. V'yivyeu lachkar al mashal lo zocharti, and the person will then study more. He wants you to study these things. That's what Chavis Alvav, there's no question about it. So you'll study more than what I write for you. I'm feeding you on a silver platter, a drop of knowledge, like a fifth grade textbook. But go learn more, because what I'm telling you is nothing compared to what's out there. And again, Kolshkein, if we're learning this 1,000 years later, with all the advances of modern science in every field of human knowledge, virtually, what will happen then when you feel grateful? V'oz yikana labore al rov chasdo v'tuvo olov. This is what he writes in Shar HaKaniya. He spends a whole shar, the shar of humility, the shar of surrendering to Hashem, one could call it. That's an offshoot of gratefulness, of gratitude, because as we've explained many, many times, this is what the Chavis Halvav, this is dynamic, is that you study these things and you feel tremendously grateful, and then you feel tremendously frustrated that you have no way of saying thank you to Hashem, you have no way of thanking Him. So you feel, and that's the feeling of humility, of smallness, that you're like sort of embarrassed. You can't thank Him enough. What are you going to do? So that's Kaniya. He explains in Shar HaKaniya. The Kaniya is the feeling that we could never pay Hashem back. We could never even thank Him enough for everything He does for us. So Yikona, he will feel Kaniya, humility, labore al rov chasdo v'tuvo olov. As he studies it, he'll realize more and more what chesed, what complexity, what wisdom, what design, what planning went into any part of his body to such a tremendous degree, and not just his body, his soul, his brain, his intelligence, the way everything combines together to work, his creativity, everything that about him. And then he'll feel small, which is God al hoda asolo, and you'll feel tremendously grateful. And that, as we said, has so many beneficial effects. You'll feel like you want to serve Him. You won't be lazy. I said in Shul, that's the Mesillas Yesharim's prescription for laziness, is to feel gratitude to Hashem for everything He gave you. So you want to jump out of bed and do His will, because that's your only way of saying thank you, is by doing His will. Chazalov says that also, but the Mesillas Yesharim says that's the surefire cure for laziness. In other words, he's saying the surefire cure for laziness is enthusiasm. That's how you overcome laziness, is by nobody is lazy if they're enthusiastic about what awaits them that day. The kid that can't get up for Shacharis is up at 4 in the morning if you're taking him to a ball game, or if you're taking him fishing, or if you're taking him hiking on a hike. So he's up at 4 in the morning, no sweat, because he's enthusiastic about that. So he's not lazy. He's not enthusiastic about going to Shacharis, or about going to yeshiva, so he's lazy. So the Chavis Shalom says the surefire cure for laziness is thankfulness, gratitude, because that will bring to enthusiasm. In other words, like I say, I'm too lazy to go to someone's chasana. Someone's making a chasana, I'm too lazy to go. Well, I'll take a bus. Too lazy to go. But if that's my only way of thanking them for something they did for me, I say, this is my way of saying thank you. I'm going to go to the chasana. And I want to say thank you. I don't feel some sort of obligation that someone's holding a gun to my head. That's what the Chavis Halavos established, or establishes in Shara Avodos Elokim that we learned for so long, that that's menschlichkeit. A normal person wants to say thank you, wants to pay the debt of gratitude, doesn't feel forced into it, like your mother says, tell Tante Shirley thank you for the nice gift. You know, you didn't want a shirt. You wanted a baseball bat. She gave you a shirt. You don't want to say thank you, so you say thank you. But when you want to say thank you, you go, thanks, Tante Shirley, when she buys you the baseball bat. You don't have to prompt him to say thank you. Then he's spontaneous. He goes over, he gives her a hug and a kiss, and says, this is what I always wanted. Thank you so much. So if we... It all comes from when you walk outside, realize, or when you're just thinking about yourself, thinking about the human being, thinking about your history, your past. He's going to go through, he's going to take us from being a fetus. We're just overwhelmed with gratitude, and it's going to have all these great offshoots of Avodas Elokim and enthusiasm and humility. I mean, this is all... Look, I always love this is picture of the way a person should be. Step one, and this is the first shahr after shahr ha-yichud. Shahr ha-yichud tells you there's a Hashem. Right? Obviously, you're not getting anywhere if you don't believe in Hashem. So shahr ha-yichud Hashem. Then the next one is shahr ha-bechina. You have to feel grateful to Hashem. You're not going to feel grateful to Hashem, right? If you don't study Shahr HaBechina, because then you can say, oh, Hashem, the dollar went down to 3.49, you know, and you have tightness to Hashem, or things didn't work out the way you wanted them to, your car broke, your kid needs braces, right? The silly, petty things in life, and, you know, and they loom large. But I love this, it's like a person that's aware of Shahr HaBechina, right? So it takes a lot. He just feels grateful for everything. His mind's working. He has a house. He has a shelter. He could daven. He could... I mean, so you feel grateful, and then you feel humble because you can't even say thank you. And you're enthusiastic about doing mitzvahs. It's a win-win-win-win-win. This is what the Chavis Halavos, we're learning it, you know. But it starts with studying. You can't, I can't inject the enthusiasm in. You have to, the person, that I told you last week, right? Everybody's, there's a disconnect because of people should learn Shahr HaBechina. People should learn Shahr HaBechina and realize it could be, I heard that by Miller on the tape suggest, very interesting thought, that very, very interesting idea. That the reason there has been, Hashem controls history, right? And obviously there's been an explosion of knowledge in the last 100 years, 200 years. Science has advanced to such a dizzying degree. You know, we know so much about the world that we never dreamed of. A very interesting suggestion, it's very intriguing. He says, when the world, everybody used to believe in Hashem. So you walked around, and you knew there was a Hashem in the world. And maybe, the question is, how much do you apply it? But as the world became atheistic, basically, because we're not talking about these silly polls of how many people go to church, that's silly, right? But as the world became basically atheistic, and nobody believes in Hashem anymore. Hashem is not... Nobody believes in Hashem. I'm talking about Christians, Muslims, Jews. So Hashem revealed, if we look at Shahr HaBechina as a way to see Hashem, ubibesorai eloka, echazei eloka, the explosion of knowledge is to fight that you're the odd man out in the world if you really are serious about Hashem. It looks like you're crazy, right? Even nice from Jews look at you like you're crazy if you mention Hashem a little too much. Right? They make funny faces like that. I'm not sure where you're coming from. And he says, very good, very intriguing thought. He says, it's so easy. No, it's much easier to see Hashem. If we look at a leaf and you study a leaf and you're able to see that a leaf is more complex than the biggest industrial park that man is able to make, every single leaf, the different parts of the leaf, and you go into the cellular structure of a leaf and how it retains water and how it eats and how it feeds and how it grows and everything about a leaf. You see Hashem's in it. We need it more. So Hashem revealed himself more. He hid himself more because there's no open nisim. Right, okay. So the revelation of Hashem in nature that the Chayes HaLovas wants us to accomplish through Shar HaBechina, he suggests, and it's a very intriguing suggestion, is to help us fight the attitude of atheism that it really has taken over. And that atheism, like, you know what's worse than not believing in Hashem? Ignoring him. People just ignore him. It's not a real thing that you have to deal with. Life is life. Anyway, so how are we going to implement Chayes HaLovas? How many women are here tonight? 4, 7, and me. What do? We have to spread the word. You have to study these things. Kamo Shamar David Olav HaShalom. Listen to this pasuk. Otcha, I will thank you, Al ki no ro'os niflesi, because I was created in a wondrous way. Nifloim ma'asecha, your pu'ulot, the things that you have created, your handiwork is wondrous. V'nafshi yoda'as ma'od. See, David HaMelech studied it. That's why Chayes HaLovas quotes this long pasuk. V'nafshi yoda'as ma'od. My soul knows this. He studied it. Maybe that's why it's good to be a roeh. You study nature and you see the interaction of all the different forces of nature. Lo nichachar otzmi mimeka. My very being is not hidden from you. Asher useisi vaseiser. I was created in a hidden place, in the womb, in a very hidden place, and infinitesimally small. Rukamti, I was woven together, put together. We'll see as we go through the development of the fetus. Betachti osaretz, in the netherworld, meaning in a very dark, hidden place. Right, at the womb of a woman. Golmi ro'einecha, but you were with me. You were with me, you saw me, you took care of me. You saw the golem. The golem is before the baby is formed. Before the baby is formed. It's just a piece of a slab of meat. I don't know what it is. A golem. That's what golem means. Bal sifrcha kulam yikasevu. But everything about me, meaning exactly how the baby is formed and how it's born and how its personality, it's everything is written down. I mean, it's a gzera from Hashem. Yomim yutzaru, it's developed over the days, meaning over the 9 months, it's developed. Below echod bohem, if you pastors, you say below with a vav, meaning, but then there's one point in time where you're actually born. Right, it's a build up of a lot of time, but there's one when you're born, one day. Or maybe it's referring to the, you know, now we know about DNA. So almost everything, the whole blueprint of the person's everything, right, is in the DNA. So there's, when that's formed, everything's formed. Then it's just a question of, it's programmed. The person's already programmed to grow and to be whatever he's going to be, and I'm not talking about Bechira, but now we know the person's already pre-programmed. So when you learn the Gemara Nida, and it says that before the baby is born, Hashem declares if it's going to be wise or foolish or rich or poor or strong or weak. See, we have this vision of a malach with the fluttering wings, and you know, but it could be the DNA, that's all. Now we know, and so maybe the Gemara is talking about the DNA. Now we know it's DNA. That at some point in time, Hashem creates a person's everything. No, everything is there. That string of pearls there that you see. Everything is there. Everything's programmed. Everything's already. Everything's set up, except for Bechira. Except for Bechira, everything's set up. I don't know about Rich. Maybe a predisposal to taking risks or being creative. Maybe we'll find the success gene, the success chromosome. Maybe they'll find it someday. Right, okay. So now we go on to the next paragraph. Okay. So he keeps talking. Now we're going to start.
It's very interesting that the discovery of DNA was convinced that it couldn't have happened by chance. So instead of postulating Hashem, he postulated coming from other from outer space. But he realized it wasn't chance. DNA was too complicated.
That's what
he
was saying. It can't be that. Well, that's what the Chavetz Chaim says. This is all to teach us that Hashem is to see Hashem, and to see His. These are the three things: to see His Chesed, because it all fits together and works; His wisdom, because it's unbelievably complex; His wisdom and the planning. And the chesed and the power. You say, Hakel, Hagodol, Hagibor, Vahanora. The intricacy of the planning and the design. And Hashem's power, Rachmim, Chesed, and wisdom. Utchilos Masheroi Loch, Shetalaba Machshavta, El Tchilos Ha'odom. Okay, so we're going to go back to a person. Vel Rashis Haviyoso. And the beginning of his existence. The Oz Tire, okay, so we're going to go mathematically, we're going to be analytical about this. The Oz Tire, Ki Chesed HaElokim HaRishon Olav, the very first step, the very first kindness of Hashem towards him is Hu Himso Achar Ofso. The very fact that he exists. In other words, now he doesn't even spend any time talking about that. That you just have to contemplate. Because now he's going to embark about explaining the different stages of coming into existence. In other words, he really is very he's going to sound like an Indian. He says, how do you get to a person? He says, you have the forces of nature. We're going to learn this inside. You have the soil. He says, everything comes from... I'll work backwards. This is what he's going to say. Everything comes from food. Everything comes from food. A person has to eat. How does a male have zera? And a woman has oval. What's it called?
Ovules.
So everything comes from food, right? The food. The person's like a manufacturing plant. The food creates everything. So everything is food. Now every food is plants. Meat is also plants. You know, everything in the world gets transformed. It's an amazingly complex system, and there's an amazing transformation. And let's say I talk about the sperm and the egg. Is that what it's called? The egg, the ovule?
Yeah, the egg.
But that he's going to explain that comes from food, because the people ate. So their body, that's amazing, because how do you make that leap? Okay, the food came from a plant. Right, it might have come from a wood, from a tree. Came an apple, meat. Everything is the plant life. Yom Shlishi. The animals have to eat, and then and somehow it becomes meat. Don't ask me how. You know, somehow it becomes milk. Somehow it becomes meat. but it all starts with food that comes from a plant. Everything is a plant. Now, what's a plant? A plant is dirt. It's inorganic matter. You're taking dirt and sunlight. What does Hashem do? He takes the sunlight, dirt, water, sunlight, I think that's
air,
it.
And air.
Right? Mm-hmm. And he mixes it together, and something grows. Now, how do you make that leap from inorganic matter to organic matter, then organic matter to food, and then food to life of a human? He says, do you realize the nisim that are going on all around us every day? And this is what he's going to describe. So, first of all, is that you exist. Because there's no compelling reason why you should exist. If you spend the rest of your life, if we would spend the rest of our lives thanking Hashem that we exist, then we have to start thanking Him that we exist as people, as Jews. As Jews, maybe you want to thank Him you exist as a woman, not as a man. I want to thank Him I exist as a man, not as a woman. As Jews, as human beings, as living organisms, life as opposed to just in Yiddishkeit, in Jewish philosophy, we are machalik between tzomeach and chai. Plant life is just growing, then there's life. But then life is medaber, as a person. Then if the person comes a Jew. So you have a Jew and a person, and life, and then you have growth, growing things, and then you could have been, could have been a rock. And then the rock's happy that it exists at all. The rock's happy that it exists. Right? It doesn't have to exist. And the rock has a role to play in the universe, and it plays its role, and it reaches a certain shleimus. And that's Perek Shira, you know, everything. Well, Perek Shira is animals, but everything thanks Hashem that they exist. So Koshkein, we can spend the rest of our lives just thanking Hashem that we exist, and we have to go back to the rock, right? The rock and plant, and so we couldn't stop thanking Hashem for that. So just the very fact that we exist, that's first. But then he says, we have to study the Vahut say so mitchunas hayesodos, how you go from inorganic matter. Mitchunas hayesodos means the fundamental matter, which we would call chemicals, minerals, right? Minerals, chemicals, el tchunas hatzomeach, to something that grows. In other words, the seed, there's something called the seed, and the seed is a very, very small thing. And it takes, I'm reading a little, it takes basic minerals from the ground and turns them into cells. Now that's a tremendous leap from one category of substance into an entirely different category, from non-living to living. We are witnessing a miracle in the course of growth as the non-living substance is drawn from the soil and transformed into living material. Right? You put a seed, the seed eats or gets from the soil chemicals, it's all chemicals. And that chemical becomes organic, it becomes something that's alive or growing. Now I'm reading from him. From living to non-living is much more than just it has life or not. A living thing is a complex organization. Mineral substances like sand, soil, and mud are not organized. They are just a mixture of chemicals. Each part of a plant exhibits more organization than in the biggest skyscraper. In a building, you have hundreds of thousands of details, the bricks, the steel girders, hardware, locks, screws, bolts, floors, windows, elevators, heating systems, lighting systems, plumbing systems. Right? A living plant is much more complicated than a building like that. It functions perfectly because as it grows and produces, it takes all the materials that are randomly present in the earth and creates out of the materials various components that function together in harmony. Now, I googled a little. Plants come from seeds. Each seed contains a tiny plant waiting for the right conditions to germinate or start to grow. Seeds wait to germinate till three needs are met: water, correct temperature, warmth, and a location, meaning in soil. During the early stages of growth, the seedling relies upon the food supplies stored within the seed until it's large enough for its own leaves to begin making food through photosynthesis. Because it has its own food supply that keeps it going, maybe like an uber, like a fetus in the mother, it gets its food till it, it doesn't produce its own food. We wish we would. The seedling's roots push down into the soil to anchor the new plant. I mean, all this is happening. It's an ace. And to absorb water and minerals from the soil. And its stem, with new leaves, push upwards towards the light. Every root grows a mass of tiny hairs near its tip to absorb water from the soil. Root hairs are cells. They take water to the main root. Then the main root brings the water to the main plant. The roots hold the plant and the ground also. The inside of a root has four different parts. The epidermis is the outside part. It's like our skin. It protects the inside part of the root. Plants take in water from the soil through their roots. The water passes through the vascular rays until it reaches the center of the root, the steles, S-T-E-L-E. This is where the veins are located. The veins are called xylem, E-X-Y-L-E-M. They carry the water and food through the plant. Between the epidermis and the stele is the fleshy cortex. Like all these things are there. The seed is underground, is collecting nutrients, and germinates. Okay, so it has its own food to start growing. Plants grow and get food afterwards from the two processes of photosynthesis and respiration. These processes make food in order for the plant to grow. I guess plants are lucky. Right? We don't. They make their own food. The plant starts off as a seed and develops into a seedling. It's protected by the seed coat. Inside the seed is the embryo. The embryo turns into the plant. For a few days, the embryo lives off the food supply in the seed. Then the embryo turns into a seedling and grows roots. Most plants need water and sunlight to grow. They need oxygen and carbon dioxide. They send out seed so that when the old plants... there's no end to this. What does a plant need to grow? It needs abundant sunlight. One of the major nutrients that a plant requires is sunlight. If the plant doesn't receive plenty of sunlight, the stem of the plants becomes thin. The leaves lose their coloration and the plant leans towards the source of light. Sufficient water, okay, fertile soil, because you need nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. It's food. You have to replenish the soil with these minerals on a regular basis by using the right kind of fertilizers and manure. That means the biggest garbage replenishes the soil, which gives us plants, which is the source of all of our food. These minerals play a vital role in the plant growth, and adequate air and temperature. Then they talk about photosynthesis and fertilizers. The process of plants are the only thing in the world that makes food. It makes food. In this process, carbon dioxide and water combine in the presence of light to form sugar, a food. Stomates are found in layers of protective cells on the surface of the leaf. Gases move in and out of the stomates. These openings connect to large air spaces in the middle layer of the leaf. carbon dioxide in the middle layer of the leaf is available to the food-making cells of the leaf. Everybody's sleeping. Chloroplast is a food factory. Carbon dioxide and water are the raw materials, photosynthesis. It's like amazing. All food. Respiration is the process by which plants discard the materials they don't use. When plants take in carbon dioxide, they let out oxygen, which is what we breathe. That's why we always have fresh air. We're breathing the waste materials of the plants.
Except at night.
What?
At night the plant gives off carbon dioxide.
Plants, then he says, all food that people eat come directly or indirectly from plants. You can eat an apple or flour, but steak comes from a cow. But how does the cow grow? A cow eats grass. Everything comes from that. Then this chlorophyll, you can spend weeks and weeks on studying a plant. Now, they have roots and stems. Roots and stems and the plant and seeds and shrubs. So many different kinds of seeds. Like, we're not even going into that. We eat grasses, corn, wheat, oats, rice, are different kinds of grasses called cereals. The seeds of these cereals provide food for many of the animals that we eat. There are also non-flowering plants, such as ferns, mosses, and algae, that produce spores. I think that's what we're allergic to. A spore is a cell with a thick, developed, protective covering. Spores, what's the point of spores? I'm not sure, okay. On the underside of fern leaves, a fern is a group of about 12,000 species of plants belonging to the botanical group known as there's mosses and ferns. It's like unbelievable. Yeah, you can go on and on. What's the purpose of ferns? They're not seed plants. Some ferns are used for food. Some are used for medicine. You just have to Google parts of a plant, how plants grow. Ferns are very useful in the removal of arsenic from the soil. Anyway, this is just a plant. So now, Chavis didn't know all of this, but he did know that the plant is taking, that there's an amazing transformation from Tchunas Hayesodos, which is inorganic material, just basic material, chemicals, however he understood it, Hayesodos, meaning just no life, just soil, dirt, minerals, chemicals. El Tchunas HaTzomeach. And a tremendous nace happens. It's like a nace. It's like you're looking at creation. Out of inorganic comes growth and the amazingly, totally complex leaf of all the different kinds of things. And we didn't touch a tree. A tree is like with the bark, with the branches and the leaves. Like, we didn't touch any of that. And then the water. So it takes water and air, and this is... Okay, I see no... I'm boring you. I'm fascinated. I didn't touch. I'm not reading everything I printed out. It's like boring.
The whole chokhmah of medicine came from the plant life.
Yeah,
what we call today alternative medicine, but for thousands of years we survived on that chokhmah that came out of that. And like the Rav said, the bark of the tree is like building like a home.
Everything.
It's mind boggling.
We gloss over Yom Shlishi a little too quickly. This is all created on Yom Shlishi, all of plant life.
Yeah.
And that's the source of, from the other thing, that's the source of life. Because everything, you know, we think of animals and people, everything is plants. Everything is plants. Everything, and then it becomes food. That's his next sentence, is the achakach yeotek, then it transforms. His first hispilus is that inorganic becomes organic. But we don't eat grass, right? If you look at a wheat, after the whole miracle of the inorganic becoming a wheat stalk, there's food there. Most of it's not food. Food is like another madrega, a transformation. Well, it gives us nutrition. It gives a person or an animal life. When it's vitamins and calories of minerals, the thing we need to grow, the thing an animal, where did that come from? Forget it. The first leap is from inorganic to organic. But then the next leap, he says, is to food. Where's the food? Food is the stuff of life. Food, somehow, magically, we're going to learn about that, gets digested and into my blood and happens to give my body everything that it needs to live. That's an amazing transformation. As miraculous as the transformation from inorganic to organic, you take air and water and soil and chemicals, and you get something that is alive, it grows. It's not alive, okay, it grows. And it's totally as complex as a factory. If you could study a leaf for a year. Look what I just read to you in a couple seconds, how many different parts of a leaf there are. Where'd they come from? Where did they come from? From Earth? Who built this skyscraper that has an electric... It's like a joke. Now you start to realize, if someone would show you a skyscraper and say that it was created by accident, over thousands of years, the air conditioning system got put in, and the plumbing, and the water, the plumbing system of a leaf is much more sophisticated than the plumbing system of a building. So how did it get there? Who put it there? And by accident? Are you crazy? Who put the plumbing system in a building, which is much, much less complex than a plant? And there it was put in. Here it was created. Out of what? Out of inorganic material. Imagine if someone tells you that, you know how I put the plumbing system in the building that provides water for the building? I threw in some dirt and some sunlight. I threw in some dirt and sunlight and water and some chemicals, and I mixed it up, and it became a plumbing system that gives water. And that's only one part of a plant, the part that gives the roots the water, the plumbing system. You have to study these things. There's an amazingly intricate, complex plumbing system in a plant, and that's just one part. It provides food for the plant, it protects the plant. That's what he said. I'll read it again. Each part of a plant exhibits more organization than you would find in the biggest skyscraper. In a building where you have hundreds of thousands of details, including the bricks, the girders, the hardware, the locks, the screws, the bolts, the floors, the windows, the elevators, heating system, lighting system, plumbing systems. You go Google the words parts of a plant, or how a plant grows, or how a plant eats, or how a plant produces its own food, right? Mind-boggling. The nace. You look at a nace. Every time you see a plant, you're seeing nisim, nisim, nisim. And it's all for the purpose of creating food, which is the next nace we'll tackle next week. And then the food goes into a person and becomes meat. Now, I don't have to eat meat to create meat, right? The cow gets meat and produces milk because it ate grass. Like, what kind of a nace is that? That's like the alchemist. They laughed at the alchemist. He produces gold How can you produce gold from base metals? So how can you produce milk from grass? If I gave you grass, in a million years, Mrs. Mamrix, you wouldn't be able to produce milk from that grass. But your body produces milk from eating an apple. That's not an ace. Okay, I'll stop here.